This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, August 10th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News, and we'll have a look at your AM 580 weekend forecast for Champaign-Urbana. But first, today's news. Illinois could be closing in on a new state budget, but the governor is refusing to say if he'll sign it. Sean Crawford has more.
The budget could wind up in the hands of Rod Blagojevich as early as today. The Senate approved the measure, and the House needs only to agree to it for it to go to the governor's desk. It would provide a record increase in school funding while holding the line on taxes. But the governor so far isn't giving it a good review.
Let me say my first impression is not very favorable. It's a budget that has failed to do a lot of things that need to get done.
Blagojevich says he wants money for infrastructure improvements and his universal health care program. Neither have garnered enough support among lawmakers. The governor also criticized the estimated $250 million for lawmakers' pork projects. It leads to more speculation the governor could reject the budget plan or delay action on it until he gets what he wants. Senate Republican leader Frank Watson has a different view.
Well, the governor's got to make a pretty quick decision, I would assume. This is not a bad budget that he has, and it's overwhelming support in both chambers. I think that he ought to sign it.
Illinois has been without a budget since the start of the month. If there's no spending authority soon, the state will be unable to pay its bills or employees. I'm Sean Crawford.
Gephardt Democrat Mike Frerich said he was leaning toward supporting the budget measure.
We do a much better job of funding schools. It's not perfect, but there's a lot of new money there. We have a decent increase for the universities, not as much as I would like to see, but better than some people were expecting and better than the past several years. We see increases in cost of living for those who provide help for people with developmental disabilities, which I was happy to see. So there's a lot of good in the budget, but, you know, there are some things that are disappointing.
Frerich said he was disappointed that the budget bill included no change in the way schools are funded, particularly a change that would provide property tax relief. Danville Republican House member Bill Black, meanwhile, says he's concerned with the pace at which legislators are expected to vote on a budget proposal. Black says he and his colleagues get a maximum of about an hour to review one of these plans before voting on it.
Any legislator who could look you in the eye and tell you, I know every line item in this budget, is either the world's greatest speed reader or they're not telling you the truth. I don't know everything that's in this budget, and that's crazy. And I've tried to get legislation that, at the very least, when you have a budget bill written, it must sit for 24 hours.
Yesterday, Black voted down the operations budget plan that passed the House on a 99-9 vote. He's the only lawmaker from the region, House lawmaker from the region, to oppose the plan. Black says he's skeptical that any revenue plan that doesn't include a casino in Chicago will make it through the Senate. Gaming is favored by Democratic Senate President Emil Jones. A state workers' union is suing Illinois over the possibility of government employees won't get their paychecks. Illinois is currently operating without a budget, and the comptroller says without one, he's prohibited from writing payroll checks. Gary Beckman of Springfield is a public service administrator with the Department of Human Services. Beckman says he has a family of six to support.
You know, I don't live paycheck to paycheck, but it's close to it, and any interruption that would impose quite a hardship on myself.
The lawsuit covers both members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, as well as other state and public university employees. The Illinois comptroller says he welcomes the lawsuit as a court order would allow his office to legally pay employees. An emergency hearing is scheduled today in Christian County. A new court fee in Champaign County would help participants in the county's drug court program get back on their feet. The $5 fee won approval this week from the county board's Justice and Finance Committees. The drug court program provides treatment for addiction to qualifying suspects who plead guilty to drug-related or DUI offenses. Circuit Judge Jeffrey Ford told the Finance Committee last night that the court fee would provide money to help with things like medical care for participants lacking insurance.
To get to see a doctor takes a long time, so they end up going to the emergency room all the time with anything. Some of them haven't taken care of their teeth ever, and we get them cleaned up, they start feeling pain, and all of a sudden they have an abscessed tooth. What do? They can't get into a dentist, so they go to the emergency room. What does the emergency room physician do to take care of the pain? Gives them narcotic drugs. So they've been drug-free for 3 or 4 months, and now we're giving them narcotic drugs to take care of the pain, and they're setting us back.
Ford says the money would also provide help with expenses such as GED test fees, work clothes, and bus tokens, all to help drug court participants reintegrate into society. The $5 fee would be imposed upon sentencing for criminal and traffic offenses. Traffic fines that don't involve a court appearance would be exempt. Ford says he thinks the fee could raise $40,000 a year for the county's drug court program. The Champaign County Board will vote on the proposal August 23rd. Two teenage peace marchers reached Champaign-Urbana yesterday after nearly 2,100 miles of walking across country. 19-year-old college student Ashley Cassell of Connecticut started the protest march against the Iraq War in May in San Francisco, along with high school graduate Michael Israel. Cassell says besides supporters, they met a lot of people opposed to her peace walk to Washington, D.C.
A lot of people scream things out the window at us, give us a pretty hard time, but a lot of people are supportive too, so it's mixed. I don't know so much we try to convince people. We try to understand their viewpoint too and their perspective, but our march is about nonviolence, and we believe that that's the only real solution.
Cassell says four more people have joined the march toward the country's capital. 18-year-old Michael Israel of California says the physically demanding walk is the experience of a lifetime, but it has its obstacles.
We thought we had someone that could help support us through the desert in Nevada and, like, bring us food and water. And after one day, she ended up backing out on us and telling us that we weren't going to make it across the country and pretty much left us stranded in Fallon, Nevada.
But the peace marchers kept it up, walking about 25 miles a day and often sleeping in parks or at a roadside. They hope to reach the nation's capital in mid-September. For the latest newscast online, go to WILL.UIUC.EDU/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bosser. Spring and summer bring with them home buyers, and with home buyers come contracts for mortgages. Commentator Amy Guida worries about offers and acceptances and their effect on interest rates in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
There is another world that many of us have been in lately, especially those of us who have purchased new houses or refinanced old ones. It's the netherworld between mortgage agreement and closing date. It's always a well-populated place when interest rates are low. There's ample proof of that in the law cases. Back in the mid-1980s, for example, when interest rates sunk to what then seemed rock bottom, 8.5% plus points, homeowners flocked to refinance, people flocked to buy houses, and they locked in those rock-bottom interest rates. Or put better, they thought that they'd lock them in. Sometimes the lender failed to make a note of the agreed-upon rate, and sometimes the homeowner assumed too much. A great example of the latter is a case from Kentucky. In it, the lenders sent a letter to homeowners suggesting refinancing at, the letter read, today's rate of 6.625%. The homeowner tried to call the lender and couldn't get through until several days later when interest rates had gone up a tick or two. When the lender wouldn't agree to the earlier interest rate, the homeowner sued. Cases like that one are decided on contract law principles. A contract requires some sort of an offer, an acceptance of that offer, and consideration that passes between the two parties, something that binds the agreement, usually money. But when the offer is by generic letter, and not all that explicit, really, there's no real meeting of the minds between the parties. There's no contract. And that's exactly what the court in the case from Kentucky decided. A letter mentioning an interest rate today of 6.625%, think about how many times you've seen that on television of late, isn't specific enough to be an offer no matter what, even if tailored for your particular mortgage needs. Decision for the lender in that case. No contract between the parties. Another contract problem in mortgage interest rate cases involves a failure to close within a specific time. Under the contract, the rate's only good for, say, 60 days. If you don't close the deal by that point, the mortgage deal's off. And home buyers don't read that part of the long contract all the time, or so the cases show. But it's more than that that sunk a deal in Delaware 2 days before closing. Despite assurances that all was okay, the appraisal wasn't adequate, and the new appraisal took longer than expected. Meantime, 60 days expired, and interest rates had gone from 9.25% to over 10.5%. The court let that one go to trial so a jury could decide who was to blame for the appraisal accident.
Now, sure, there are laws on the books that make things clearer or laws that are supposed to make things clearer. But it is sort of a netherworld between mortgage agreement and closing, and the devil's in the details. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. In the weekend forecast for Champaign-Urbana, today mostly sunny skies with a high around 88 degrees. Tonight mostly clear, the low 65. Sunny skies tomorrow, the high around 90. Mostly clear tomorrow evening, the lows around 68. Mostly sunny on Sunday with a high around 92. For Sunday evening, partly cloudy, there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the low around 70. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, August 10th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.